Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South American. All the ships at sea. Let's go to press.
Hello.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
I think the media is among the most dishonest groups of people I've ever met. Good
sir. One of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides.
What Boehner is angry with is the American people holding him accountable.
If I become president, oh, do they have problems. They're going to have such problems.
Well, I don't know why that's funny.
Welcome to the Ricochet Podcast, number 324. I'm Rob Long. With me, Peter Robinson, and our special guest, Andrew Ferguson. So let's kick it. Welcome to the Ricochet Podcast. This is number 324. Divide by 50, I guess, and you get how many years we've been doing this, which is a lot, many, many years through ups and downs and sideways moves. never quite as weird as this. I'm Rob Long. I'm coming to you from rainy Oxford, Mississippi, the home of the University of Mississippi and the home this weekend of the Southern Foodways Alliance annual symposium. And on the line with me, as always, is my good friend Peter Robinson from Palo Alto. Peter, how are you?
I'm all right, although it's rainy here in Palo Alto as well. And by the way, I just pulled up my calculator to do the math because, as you know, Rob, I'm no mathematician.
Six, yeah.
And it turns out to be 6.48. That cannot be the case. We cannot possibly have been doing this for six and a half years.
I think it is. Six and a half years. In the, I think was started in the early, you know, those early hopeful days of the Barack Obama administration when we were all excited about the future.
And as you know, I told you it would all blow over. I told you nobody would ever listen to podcasts.
You did. Podcasting wasn't going to work. I feel like we need to take a moment. Let's take a moment for this. If you're listening, this is the Ricochet Podcast. We are pleased to have you as a listener. We are brought to you by four very important sponsors. The first is ZipRecruiter. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. And also by Casper Mattresses. Try a Casper mattress for 100 nights, risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they pick it up and refund you everything. Go to casper.com/ricochet. Use the coupon code ricochet for your discount. And Peter, you're a Casper believer.
I'm a total Casper believer, and as is my wife. We've got the king size Casper, with the result that we don't bump into each other.
That's right. At no point do you ever need to have any contact between the two of you ever again. That's good.
Exactly. And I also I bought whatever 2 or 3 months ago. Actually, the man who sold this Casper pillow was John Podhoretz, because John on one of your Glop podcasts, John added after reading the Casper copy that he had just bought a Casper pillow. And I thought, if it's good enough for J-Pod, it's good enough for me. And it is good enough for me.
That's good. Wouldn't it be terrible if you found out it was good for J-Pod and it's not that good for you? You're like, yeah, I guess I have higher standards. We are also brought to you by The Great Courses. It's always rewarding to learn something new. We are lifelong learners. So you can start your free month today by going to thegreatcoursesplus.com/ricochet. thegreatcoursesplus.com/ricochet today. But most importantly, or additionally importantly, I should say, for our sponsors, we are brought to you by ricochet.com. I'd like to say hello to all our new listeners on Slate's Panoply Network. So I think some of you are listening to this thinking, wait, these guys don't sound like they're celebrating the impending Hillary Clinton victory. We're going to center right over here, just to let you know, people on the Slate's Panoply Network. But if you like what you hear and you are part of the large group of people who want civil conversation on the web, please join Ricochet. That's what we do. Center right, smart, civil conversation. We are in a very serious, crucial member drive. We need 1,500 new members. We only have 8. We're about halfway through. We need the second half is very, very important for us, for everything. So if you're listening, we have tens and tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands of listeners, and we don't really need that many members, but we do need you. Please join strike a blow.
May I add here?
Yes.
Just lest anybody suppose that you and I are out to get rich. Actually, we'd love to get rich.
Lest anybody
suppose that you and I are actually capable of same. We are trying to cover our costs. There are costs involved in Ricochet. We have to pay certain people to do certain things. They're wonderful human beings. They do things well, and they deserve their pay. And then there is the maintenance fees and so forth associated with keeping a website running. And it is no longer enough. Actually, it's no longer even amusing to us to say that we're losing money more and more slowly all the time, which sounded quite this is all going to be fun.
Yeah. What a merry lark.
Yes, a year and a half ago. We do actually need members.
Yes, we do need members. So if you've been putting it off, please join. Three levels of membership. You get cool stuff no matter what. You can also subscribe for free. If you kind of want to check it out, subscribe for free to The Daily Shot, go to ricochet.com and sign up. It's our daily email newsletter. Funny way, witty way, comes in your inbox every morning, gives you all the ammunition and the jokes you need to make it through the very, very rough days ahead. So that's all said and done. I also need to say that usually this stuff is done by James Lilex, who's a lot more professional than I am and sort of delivers a more professional voiceover product for just pennies per serving, as James would say. But he is off this week. I'm not quite sure what he's doing, but he's got something. He had some stuff to do. So he's not here this week. So it's just me and Peter. This is the podcast Old School.
That's right. That's right.
So, Peter.
No, we started. Okay, if you're going to get to politics right away, I just
I am. You want to have a little you want to have a little break first?
Oh yes, please. What are you doing in Oxford, Mississippi?
We cannot delay the inevitable, but I'll tell you, Oxford, Mississippi, home of University of Mississippi. I'm on the board of something called the Southern Foodways Alliance, and we have our annual symposium here every October, right around now. And I took a little time out of it this morning to come do this, but it is a fun, interesting weekend where we sort of explore a theme of Southern Foodways, you know, not just cooking, eating, and drinking, but growing and processing and marketing and so, all the sort of the history of the Southern Foodways. The South is really the country's attic. Everything's up here. Right. Everything's here stored. And you just every now and then have to drag it out and just pull it on the lawn and take a look at it.
So can
and
I – can I?
What we do.
Since it at Ole I know we have to get to politics, but there's one follow-up question. Since it's at Ole Miss – a great academic institution. Is this sort of like? Is it the culinary equivalent of those projects that took place in the 40s and 50s, where people would go around and record the last blues guitarist in such and such? Is that kind of thing?
Alan Lomax recordings. Yeah, it's not. I mean, we do a lot of academic stuff. So we do a lot of oral history. So we. One of the things we do, we raise money to send people all over the South writ large too, which includes a lot of border states too, and record people's memories and thoughts and stuff and histories before they all die. That's kind of the grim reality, is that some enormous amount of the human memory, human experience is locked up in people's brains. And when they die, they take them with them. So we kind of want to.
Before we have to get them all, we have to get these local traditions down before the federal government regulates hush puppies and collard greens.
Well, yes, I mean the federal government's already regulating. First of all, hush puppies, corn, fried cornmeal. So the federal government's already in your corn. I mean, corn itself is not even at this point so much an agricultural product as it's a political product. In which there are people in Congress making federal regulations and setting a federal price and guaranteeing certain things for the raising of corn. It's weird. So it's we live in a agriculture, especially in food, for the thing that something that we all do, you know, three plus times a day, unfortunately three plus for me. It's remarkable how little people know about it and how much it's regulated by this sort of federal behemoth, although that will not be a surprise to a lot of us because we sort of believe that the government should be smaller and the government should be leaner and do less. Speaking of doing less.
Yes, yes. All right.
Politics now?
Go ahead. Yes, yes.
As you know, I'm not a fan of Donald J. Trump, and I really did not plan to vote for him. I plan to just go down ballot and leave that blank.
I'm a little hurt, Rob, because I thought we had a deal. I am certainly going to write in Rob Long.
Well, yeah, I will serve If nominated, I will run, and if if elected, I will serve. Let you know. I couldn't. I don't think I would be worse.
No.
It may take me a little. It may be a little time to hit the ground, you know, because like you know, Hillary Clinton kind of knows where, you know, where everything is in the Oval Office and where they keep the extra pencils. She's been there for so long. But I don't think I would do a terrible job. I would just do a mediocre job. So that's, put that on your bumper sticker. To me, it you know, it's like things keep happening every day. Two things are angering me. One angers me is just the sheer stupidity, political stupidity of the Trump operation. The Bannon, Giuliani, Christie gang of morons, and I will say that without any hesitation at all. They are fools. They are either sycophants in that office who cannot speak frankly to the candidate, or they are idiots, and they just think that they live in a country they don't live in, or that things magically happen. But either way, I am eager for them to be ushered off the national stage and thrown into a pit somewhere for their stupidity. The second thing is, it is hugely depressing that we now, I mean, unfortunately, that comes from these leaks. We now have actual proof that we can read of the Clinton campaign and their craven, meretricious, incredibly cynical manipulation of what is in fact an important issue, TPP.
Right.
And we have it in writing, and of course, there's no way. And it's not the liberal media not paying attention to it. It's that this giant swamp of swamp gas that is the Trump campaign is sucking up all the oxygen. And it fills me with a kind of such a dread. I almost would prefer to talk about movies, but I don't know. Are you depressed, Peter?
No, well, as you have seen, I would prefer to talk about hush puppies and college. And those are not normally at the top of my conversational go-to list, I can tell you. So
yeah.
Am I depressed? I was thinking to myself, oh, my goodness, Rob, we have to provide a balanced podcast here. Is it up to me to defend Donald Trump? Because I can no longer do so. I never did so with a happy heart, but I was able to make an argument. And of course, my argument was, if this guy can stay on message and behave in a minimally disciplined manner – then he's right. Making an argument. I believe he's wrong on trade, but either correct or has a point on almost everything else. And on balance, he would be better for the country than Hillary Clinton. That was always my argument. But again, it was premised on his behaving in a minimally decent, intelligent way. And that he has not only failed to do, but now – in the last couple of days in which he's running against Republicans, he's talking about having the shackles off. That was the shackled Donald Trump that we were watching for the last six or seven months. That was the Donald Trump under inhibitions that we were watching. So what we have now, I don't know whether Rudy Giuliani's not a moron. He's a highly intelligent man, but something is going on in that campus. I reposed.
Well,
Well, I repose my hope in Kellyanne Conway, whom I've known not terribly well, but I've known for years, and she's a highly intelligent, very good human being. And the way it looks to me is that Donald Trump was listening for Kellyanne about as long as he could stand to do so, and now he's being Donald Trump, and the other people you named are being – they're all in the locker room. He talked about the tape as if – he said that's locker room conversation – as if he had transcended that a decade ago, but they're yeah, you go get them. That must be the kind of conversation they're having now.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, be yourself. Look, there
it's self-indulgent, it's vain, and it is fool that he is. It's foolish. Yes,
there were levels of trouble in the DNA of this campaign from the beginning, and you could make an argument all along. I'm against his trade policy. I'm against a lot of the things he's for. I mean, I'm for entitlement reform. He's against it. So I have policy differences with the candidate.
Right.
He is an electrifying figure, people would say. So that you can say, well, you know, we'll get in there. We can kind of, you know, move him where we want to move him. Okay, there are all sorts of reasons to vote for this guy. Except for the one, which is that 53%+ of the American electorate are women, and they despise him. I mean, they despise him in a way that we have not seen in national politics. And he seems to be totally uninterested in persuading anyone to vote for him. Instead, he yells at you when you aren't going to vote for him, and he gets paranoid and blamed. He's a terrible, terrible, terrible candidate. He is the worst candidate in American political history, and he's running against the second worst candidate in American political history. And the problem is that does not change whether you want him to win or whether you think he should win or whether you're worried about the Supreme Court or whether you think that he could be moved closer to our principles when he gets in. It does not matter. If you're living in America in 2016 and in April of 2016, you thought this guy really had a shot without some radical personality changes, you're living in fantasy land. His negatives were stratospheric, much higher than hers. She at least had had a period as Secretary of State where she was phenomenally popular in this country.
Yeah.
I mean, forget, she was the most admired woman in America for like 5 years running. Now, I'm not saying she should be admired. That's always our problem with our side, is they start yelling at you when you say what is true because they don't want it to be true.
You sound like and a man who's been yelled at.
Yes, fundamentally, Donald Trump is a fantasy land candidate, and we should not have been running our dream journal for president. We should have been running an actual candidate with an actual professional operation.
No. And we are now – we are now moving into – so look, there's still a month to go. Not quite a month. There's still a month to go. All kinds of things could still happen. Who knows? But if but I'm with you, and at this point, I agree that we're moving – between now and November 8th, we've got something like a tragedy on our hands, because the greatest nation in the world – is making a spectacle of itself, and this is where the tragedy comes in my judgment, squandering an opportunity, worse than squandering an opportunity. All those kids, I was talking about this, Paul Ray, our beloved friend Paul Ray, professor at Hillsdale, was here at Stanford the other day, and I was talking about this with him, that he's a college professor, so the students in his classes are going to be voting for president for the very first time, and what do you tell them? And Paul said, well, there are arguments, but of course their impulse is just to look away in disgust. Right. Or I was thinking the other evening, on Sunday evening, there are Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And about 5 minutes into the debate, my wife and I instinctively looked at each other and closed the door so that our 14-year-old daughter, who was down the hall studying, wouldn't overhear any of the crudity or tell a presidential debate is no longer family viewing. This is unbelievable. Right. It's just.
I think it's also. Yeah, there's also one other moment I think of that debate that was really telling, and I think that's why I'm convinced that the Republican candidate is doomed, and that the Republican Party is probably doomed as well, at least for a period. Like Chernobyl, it needs to. You know, this is not ground. Anything's going to grow on for many years. The Republican candidate turned to the Democratic candidate and said, "You have evil. She has evil in her heart.
Tremendous hatred. Tremendous hatred.
Tremendous hatred in her heart."
Yes,
it was one of the most unequivocal invectives I think I can imagine in American politics, and it had zero effect. Not only zero effect, it had a negative effect, a blowback effect against the Republican candidate. He has gone nuclear to her face, and he went down in the polls, which suggests to me that this is a person who a lot of people feel now it's just noise coming out of his mouth. He's lost the microphone, and they are going to tar us with this loser for the next. I mean. And then they should. My God, why would you? If we were on the other side, I wouldn't give it up. I mean, this is great stuff. He's going to lose. It's going to be a catastrophic loss, and they're going to wrap it around our necks as they should.
Now you're saying things with which I don't think we can. I don't know yet that it will be a. For sure, there are makings of a loss of 6 to 8 points, taking the Senate down with him, reduced majority in the House. That's within the probability dispersion. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But I don't think we can say that yet. And this is a subject for another podcast for the following reason. Peter hasn't thought it through yet. But I have the feeling I'm not willing to take you on this subject yet. But I just have the feeling that grown-ups in the GOP, there's going to be a great – the GOP is going to be able to take a shower and get Trump off and away and out. There will be no hesitation to repudiate this guy from every Republican going on the morning of November 9th. Now, damage, yes. I haven't thought this through, as I say. But Hillary Clinton, let us not – for you and I are railing against Donald Trump because, you know, in a certain sense, we're railing against Donald Trump for the same reason that some Americans rail against Israel more than they do against the Arabs. We have higher standards for the people that we expected.
And we could have won it. We could have won it. We could have won it.
Marco Rubio, this is what breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Marco right. Rubio, Hispanics would have said, yeah, that's a party that's open to me. We could have won it. We went to a school event. As you know, our kids go to a Catholic school. And a nun who teaches seventh graders. And she said, you know, this is bad for the children. It's bad for the children. And
man,
we've lost the nuns. And she was so angry. She was spitting angry. And she said they should just cancel this next debate. We already know too much about both of these people.
Well, they can't cancel the next debate, Peter, because we're going to have a Ricochet meetup in Manhattan. We're all going to watch it together. And by the way, it'll be the first moment of unity, physical unity. We're going to have a bunch of never-Trumpers there and a bunch of pro-Trumpers there. And we're all going to get along because that's the way it's going to be, because I'm going to decree it from on high. If you want to come check out the site, go to ricochet.com, find out when and where. You have to be a member. Like, well, this isn't just for any you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry. You got to be a member to come to this members meetup. So join Ricochet and come as a member, and we will be pleased to have you there and to watch this thing together. Before we go to thank – you know what? I'm so glad we're talking to Andy Ferguson because he's funny and we need a light and a laugh. Before we go, guess what? No segue. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all of the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, all Ricochet podcast listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Just try it once for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Isn't it nice that we're doing a spot from a company that's designed to help people get jobs? That means maybe something – I don't know. I'm looking for any signs of life. No?
It's wonderful. It's a sign of life. Excuse me. I had to step away from the microphone for 90 seconds to close the windows here. I'm recording this.
Yeah, I heard there's a gardener.
There's a gardener across. Yeah, exactly. So
do another job sign Americans won't do. Is that what that Jared, let me guess, in Palo Alto.
Northern California.
You have a very, very clear idea.
I think he's Slovenian, actually.
Of course. Right. We are now joined by a good friend of ours and one of the most wonderful writers around, Andrew Ferguson, but I'm going to call you Andy, senior editor at Weekly Standard, author of Fool's Names, Fool's Faces, Land of Lincoln, Adventures in Abe's America. Well, that was a beautiful, beautiful book. Most recent is Crazy You, One Dad's Crash Course on Getting His Kids into College, another beautiful book. Welcome, Andy. Can you cheer us up a little bit? We're a little bit depressed, Peter and I.
Well, now I'm feeling beautiful. I really do, with all those beautiful things I've done.
You have the best words.
I feel pretty, I know other like people Natalie say... Wood in West Side Story.
other people have claimed to have the best words, but you really do have the best words.
Can we just talk? Who put those words in his mouth, by the way, Peter?
That's right, someone. Yeah. We're a little bit in despair, Peter and I, about obviously about the obvious things, and we were just talking before you got on. I don't think we do enough Hillary bashing.
Well, wait a minute. Haven't we gotten kind of tired over the last 22 years, 24 years?
Well, you know, take a nap and get ready because it's you got another bunch of years coming.
Hey,
well,
Go ahead.
I'm moving to I have my place picked out in Victoria, British Columbia, and that's where I'm going. And I'm never going to read a newspaper or watch a television or listen to a radio ever again. So I'll let you guys pick up the slack on the Hillary bashing. I'm done.
Andy, in the Weekly Standard, your current piece, unless you have a new one out in the last 24 hours, which you being you, you may. You wrote a piece called
on Bob Dylan.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll come to Bob Dylan in a moment. Right. Rob, find that. Right. Call that piece up on the
online. I got it. Way ahead of you.
Sniffing at Trump. You wrote a piece about Graydon Carter's anti-Trump editorial in Vanity Fair. Graydon Carter is the editor of Vanity Fair. And Andy Ferguson writes as follows. Graydon Carter, he calls the Trump ascendancy, quote, the final stage of a dumbed-down America, close quote. Who could disagree? Trump's rise, boosted by the 40% of our fellow citizens who see him as a plausible president, is indeed evidence of a serious system-wide failure. The question is, who did the dumbing down? Andrew?
Well, you go through the litany. You got public schools, popular entertainment, the press, pretty much every major institution in America has contributed to this dumbing down. Dumbing down is Carter's phrase, and I hardly endorse it. But the problem for people like Carter is who are lamenting this stupidity of America, as it's expressed in this election year, is that every one of those institutions that have sort of been responsible for the dumbing down are squarely in the hands of liberal Democrats and have been for half a century or more. The public schools education policy has been set by liberal Democrats. I mean, hell, they even invented the whole stupid Department of Education. Of course, it goes without saying, the movie studios, television studios, TV networks generally those are the things that are responsible for it. And I don't think you could throw a brick in the HBO newsroom and find anybody who voted for Bush or Reagan or would vote for Trump.
How odd is their sniffy contempt, Andy writes, for Donald Trump, the purest flowering of the culture they've created. So before we get to Bob Dylan, which I know Rob is, I am going to simply recuse myself knows, when it comes to popular culture, I'll just go off and read Tolstoy while the two of you talk about Bob Dylan. But I have
That's why you're so much smarter than the rest of us, because you haven't been dumbed down through all the popular institutions of entertainment and everything.
That's right.
I knew there was a reason why you were such an egghead.
So, Andy, you are the father of two kids. We talk about this, we fathers. This is all on my mind because I attended a football game, a Dartmouth football game, 2 weekends ago in Hanover, New Hampshire. I'll get to there's a point I'm making here. And in the stands were a couple of kids I knew. I read, who are these kids? And I chatted with them. And they were young men who'd been on the field. They had graduated the previous year. And I thought to myself, in the small scale way of Hanover, New Hampshire, sic transit gloria mundi, how quickly those guys were the most important men on that campus a year ago, and now nobody recognized them. And if within the space of a summer, people can forget so much, how do you communicate? how do you communicate? I'm doing a segue from college football to 60% of 18 to 25-year-olds supported Bernie Sanders, all the polls show. 60% in two generations, kids have forgotten anything they might have known. The nation seems to have forgotten anything it might have known about the Cold War, communism, the dangers of statism. Do democracies simply have to go through a crisis every two generations to recover their senses? I guess what I'm asking is how is there any hope if we can't transmit just basic history from one generation to the next?
I don't know if I'm all that discouraged about that in particular. You know, 18 to 25 year olds have never exactly been, you know, members of Mensa. This isn't the most intelligent cohort in our population. And actually, it looks
that's
like
why we used to have point, more that's why we used to have pointless wars, right? Just a bad
right, exactly. So we could, yeah, cull the herd or something. Yeah. But anyway, so I mean, you know, people get more sensible, I think, I hope, as you get older and as you live longer and pay more taxes and things like that. So I'm not too discouraged about that. Just by virtue of the fact that they're young, they're not going to be amenable to a lot of argument and reason. It's a bigger problem with the rest of the country. And it, as I just said, you know, it turns out the more education you have, the
stupider you get.
Yeah, stupider by my lights anyway. So that is a real problem right there. And you know, the Sanders thing, you couldn't, I mean, every campus in America, from what I could tell, was in the throes of being in love with this balding Vermont ex-hippie. You know, it's just weird.
All right, on to Dylan.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that, you know, that cohort may not be, that age cohort may not be the most intelligent, but there's a whole sort of cohort of world intelligentsia who have a sort of an arrested sense of being 24, and that's the baby boomers. And they have now decided that Bob Dylan should get a Nobel Prize for Literature, and that just bugs you, Andy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, actually. I was all prepared to, when I heard the news yesterday morning on NPR, of course, I was ready to do a tuck and roll, get under my desk, and try and avoid the avalanche of pretentious journalism that was going to ensue from this news. But it turned out you really can't get away from it. And so I wrote a little something about Dylan and his relationship to sort of the baby boomer intelligentsia. You know, some really, really high powered, genuinely accomplished intellectuals like Sean Wilentz, the historian, right, and Christopher Ricks, and have written these just so totally over the top things about Dylan. And I should say, you know, I really like Dylan. I think Dylan is you know, an extremely talented and very hardworking guy, and he deserves respect just because he's kind of stayed at the top of the heap for 55 years, which is a really stunning accomplishment when you think about it. So I don't really have anything against Dylan. I do have something against baby boomer gilding of the lily. You know, they're always trying to amp everything up. So you can't just say, you know, Dylan wrote lots and lots of really charming songs that meant a lot to us when we were young. And, you know, he's inventive and hardworking. He has to be a goddamn genius, you know?
Right,
he has
right.
to be a Nobel laureate. Yeah, I mean, no, he doesn't. He really doesn't. He can just be taken on his own terms. And, you know, it's worth noting, too, that Dylan himself has never believed his own press, at least to judge by interviews and so on. He really, you know, he has a perfectly sound estimate of his own self-worth, which should be considerable. But, you know, he's disavowed being a genius or a voice of a generation or any of that kind of stuff. And yet you've got like Cass Sunstein, the well-known Harvard law professor, going goo-goo over him in the, right, you know, on Bloomberg View. And it's like, you know, can't you guys just leave well enough alone? Bob Dylan has been a terrific presence in many ways in American popular culture, but he doesn't need a Nobel Prize for Literature to ratify him.
Hey, Andy. Rob is astounded that I actually have the temerity to enter this conversation.
Name one Bob Dylan song, Peter, if you wouldn't mind.
That thing about the thing that the times they are a changin'. Isn't that Bob Dylan?
I'll allow it.
This is great.
I'll allow it.
Where have all the flowers gone? Isn't that?
Yeah, I know. We tried that once before. No.
No. That's no.
Listen, no, Andy, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good guess from him.
Tell me it's not Trini Lopez. Tell me I didn't make that mistake at least. Listen, Andrew. Bob Dylan, corpus of Bob Dylan versus the oeuvre of the Beatles. Rank, compare, contrast.
Oh, I don't know. I think they were all about different things. So it's hard to really compare them. I mean, obviously they all liked each other and they respected each other. In fact, Dylan, one of Dylan's great accomplishments is this beautiful memoir he wrote in, I think, 2004. Called Chronicles Volume 1, and I keep waiting for Volume 2. I don't know if he's ever going to get it done. But anyway, it's an absolutely magnificent piece of writing, in my view. And he really has some wonderful observations about what the Beatles meant when they kind of exploded in 1964. Because, you know, he was already an established big shot by the time the Beatles came along to America. But anyway, it's an interesting relationship that they all had.
That's Andy's way of saying I just asked a very stupid question. Okay, back
to
Bob.
Yeah, question has no answer. Well, I want to ask.
No. If I thought you said my way of saying Peter, you said a really stupid question is to say Peter, you said a really stupid question. That's the way I do that.
That's good to know for future. I guess I want to go back to the overselling it issue. Because we hear, I mean, and also to go back to sort of draw some kind of comparison between the cohort you were talking about earlier. If you're 18, 19, 20, 20 to 25, I guess, in this country, you are part of this helicopter parent, every kid gets a trophy generation. I mean, I'm shorthand here, but, you know, the idea that everything needs to be celebrated. And now we're seeing the ripple effects of that with the sort of Nobel Prize for Literature for Bob Dylan, this idea that, as you put it, like everyone has to be a genius at a certain level. won't there be a move soon for us all to get – I mean, shouldn't we all be getting prizes today or yesterday?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think as journalists, sooner or later we all will get prizes because that's – pretty much what journalists do is give prizes to each other. So that editor here likes to say that the most redundant phrase in the English language is prize winning journalist. But the thing is about, the sort of celebrating everybody and everybody's number one and all that kind of stuff. There's another thing with Dylan, I think, which is, well, two things are operating. One is, it's a way of flattering yourself, you know. It's a way of saying my generation produced this poet laureate, you know, and I figured out how great he was when I was 16, and I've never let up realizing how great he is. And, you know, so there's a little self-congratulation going on there. The other thing is Dylan came along at a time when in poetry, you no longer had to be intelligible. It was a long wave of poetry that crested in the 60s, where intelligibility went the way of rhyme schemes and scanning and that sort of thing. It just wasn't required of a poet anymore. And so Dylan, you know, not having to be intelligible, especially in those records from the mid 60s, you know, he could just say whatever popped into his head and everybody had to pretend they knew what he was saying. And he took full advantage of that. I mean, if you listen to just like Tom Thumb's Blues, or I talk about Desolation Row, which Cass Sunstein, the Harvard Law professor, calls Dylan's King Lear, you know, I mean, talk about gilding the lily. Yeah, Desolation Row is King Lear. I mean, come back down to earth, Cass, please.
That's right. I mean, King Lear at least is a couple hours. Lasts a couple hours.
Yeah. Standard LP is 20 minutes aside. Row.
What's that?
If you listen to Desolation Row lately, it can sound that way too.
Hey, we'd like to talk a little bit about politics if we could, but can do you mind if I do a quick sponsor message and then come back? Is that okay? I don't want to take all of your morning. I want to take as much as possible.
Okay. Whatever you say. So
these are the awkward segues that I have to do because James Lyles is not here to do them professionally. The mattress industry scores consumers into paying notoriously high markups. Casper Mattresses is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing the savings directly to you, the consumer. Time Magazine named it, which is still a magazine, named it one of the best inventions of 2015. It's an award-winning mattress that won't disappoint. Peter Robinson has already sung its praises. Casper's an obsessively engineered mattress, shockingly fair price. Normal mattresses cost about $1,500, but Casper's cost $500 for a twin, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, $950 for a king. An in-house team of engineers spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink, just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. Buying a mattress from Casper is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery, free returns with a 100-night home trial. So if you don't love it, they pick it up, refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. Best of all, Casper mattresses are made in America.
Even Andrew Ferguson would agree if there were a Nobel Prize for sleep, Casper mattresses would deserve to win it.
Stay tuned. I have never wanted to take a nap so much in my life.
So look, here's a special offer for listeners of the Ricochet Podcast. Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/ricochet and using the code word ricochet at checkout. We thank Casper Mattresses for sponsoring the Ricochet Podcast. Now back. So Andy Ferguson, can we talk about politics just a little bit, maybe even obliquely? What happens after this? I mean, this is not going to last forever. We only have 3 weeks left. It seems like we have 30 years left. But eventually, it's going to be over, and eventually someone's going to be president. That person will probably be Hillary Clinton. What do people do after that who didn't want her and were confused?
Well, I already told you what I'm doing. It's British Columbia for me.
Yeah. What are the ones who aren't retreating?
And you guys can come visit whenever you want. I'll tell you, there are a few things that I dislike in life more than thumb sucking think pieces. And I'm afraid we are going to, I mean, they rank up there with these Bob Dylan hagiographies.
Right.
We are about to have a tsunami of these things and telling us, you know, whether the conservative movement, whether the Republican Party, and
it's always wither, right?
Yeah. What is wither?
I
wither when I read them. They don't usually do much good. They keep some people busy. And because what generally happens, in my experience, is the shape of politics is determined day by day. And the Republican Party, I assume, will revive quickly enough just by virtue of the awfulness of Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. They will really be feeling their oats, and they will take this, you know, the country's kind of going through a big collective upchuck now looking at Trump, and the Democrats, true to themselves, are going to misinterpret that as some kind of embrace of an increasingly left-wing agenda. Right. And when they do that, and they, you know, and they screw up the Supreme Court, and they screw up the Department of Education and the EPA, and even more than they already have, there will be a conservative movement and a Republican Party will very quickly come together. And how it will define itself will just be something that develops month by month. And but if you look in my reading of American history, is that political movements arise in opposition to something.
Right.
And we are about to have an extremely juicy target.
Beautiful.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Was that beautiful?
That's uplifting.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was optimistic in its own kind of bleak way. Right. You're a bleak optimist, which I think is probably the right attitude.
No, but that's go ahead. No, I'm writing that down. Political.
Well, maybe I didn't emphasize enough the fact that they're going to try and destroy the country. Did I get that across?
Yeah, well, you did. But to get elected to try to destroy the country, part of me feels like that's terrible, right? Part of me feels like once again we're overstating it. You know, we're overstating. It's like this nuclear waste zone after after the first 100 days of the Hillary Clinton presidency, all liberty will be lost. And it seems to me, it's not really going to be. They're going to try. They're going to try, but all this like weird amplified talk just sounds kind of like what they used to say about us on the other side. That Reagan's America, it's permanent winter time for women. All that stuff just seems nuts. Is it nuts, or you think in this case it's going to really happen?
No, I think that's a good point. I mean, I remember I had the misfortune of writing speeches for the first President Bush, and I remember after he lost being at the White House in meetings, and everybody just said, well, Bill Clinton is about to be elected and he's going to raise taxes and the economy is just going to tank and unemployment is going to go up. And well, of course, we know that, in fact, exactly the opposite happened for lots of different reasons. But the country became quite healthy by many measures. And our mistake was to just think, well, we hate tax cuts. Therefore, if Clinton raised taxes, which he did, this fragile thin reed of an American economy is going to collapse beneath it. And that was idiotic. I actually kind of believed it, and it was stupid, because this is a huge country filled with people who want to get rich and very clever people. And they are not going to be deterred by the most wicked person taking over OSHA and EPA. They do workarounds when the government is not cooperative. And that's the thing that I keep relying on. And it's such an amazingly wonderful country that you can't imagine that they can screw it up too much, I guess. But as I say, they're going to try.
Andy, you're talking about the economy. Let's circle back to the subject on which we started, which was the culture, the popular culture. The Republican Party, conservatism may rebound very quickly. As you just put it, we're going to have a big, juicy target. But for 50 years, when Ronald Reagan was president and when he wasn't, when George H.W. Bush was president and when he wasn't, as you yourself said, the liberals have controlled Hollywood, the universities, the press, the culture. Does this ever change? Have we simply ceded? Does it ever change? Let's leave it at that. Let's leave the question at that. Over to you.
That's a good question. And the only way it would ever change was if we didn't try and do anything about it. And I mean by that is what we think of as healthy, conservative leaning social order is the way people naturally want to live. And they want to have families. They want their families to be healthy. They want their kids to get ahead when they grow up. They want them to be honest and upright. And the only thing a government can do is kind of screw up those ambitions and hopes that people have for their lives. And if we can, if we just sort of through a nice pull of subsidiarity, as we Catholics like to say, if we can sort of push authority and decision-making further down the food chain towards where real people live and away from Washington, away from politics, then I think the country can reassert itself in its natural condition. But, it's going to be hard. The Democrats are going to come along and are going to be the busiest bodies you've ever seen, the busiest busybodies ever. And They're not going to let anybody alone. So it's tough. It's really tough.
So, Andy, let me ask you.
I'm not crazy about it.
Let me ask you this then. Hollywood, just take Hollywood. 30s, 40s. Yeah, you pipe down for this one. 30s,
ooh,
40s.
Ooh.
20s, even 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. That town is founded. The businessmen behind that town tend to be immigrant Jews, largely from your Eastern Europe. Many of them.
The founders of it.
The founders of Hollywood and the men who remain dominant, at least through the early 50s, and they are pro-American. Hollywood, there are a couple of pictures that have sort of lefty leanings in the – but fundamentally, it's one celebration of American life after another that Hollywood produces. How did we lose that, and is there any prospect of getting it back?
I don't have the slightest idea. you know, I did have once, you know, the great historian Gertrude Himmelfarb.
Yes.
I interviewed once for something I was writing. She also happens, by the way, to be the mother of my boss here at the Weekly Standard. But I think it was after 9/11 or something, and there had been this big thesis about divided America and all that kind of thing. She said the big mistake that conservatives have made is to think that their opposites on the other side, the liberals and leftists and so on, aren't patriotic and don't love their country. And she said, that's just absolutely not true. They love a different country from the one conservatives love. And, that to me is the perfect example of sort of misunderstanding what other people are up to. I mean, the people are well-meaning, I think, in general. It's very hard to, you know, kind of defeat people by motive mongering, by assuming that they're just sort of bad and they hate America and that kind of thing. Because I think they do love America. It's just a different America from the one that a lot of other, the, you know, more conservative people think they love.
All right,
so Robert. I did tell Peter, you that I don't know, right? I said
you did. You made that very clear. You made that very clear. All right. So, I mean, I ask this question a lot, but I never thought I'd ask you because I always thought I would. Our next 10, 15 years, are you optimistic about the 10, 15 years in the future for America?
Yes. Always the safest bet in talking about America is optimism. If you're not optimistic about America, it's sort of – you have real problems with human beings. Because I think if freedom asserts itself and I think it probably will. I have no idea how. Then the greatness of the country asserts itself, and I just don't see how you keep it down. I don't, you know. As I say, there's a lot of really really smart people and a lot of ambitious people, and thank God for them. And I don't think that their ambition and their genius is going to be stifled for very long.
Mm. Wow. Well, that
Andy Ferguson speaking to us from Victoria, British Columbia about this optimism.
I live on Pollyanna Street.
Yeah, that's right. Fantasyland Avenue. I think that's right off there. Andrew Ferguson, thank you for joining us. That was great.
Thanks, guys.
And we, you know, we'll send you some clicks. We'll put the links to the Bob Dylan piece and to the Sniffing and Trump piece in the podcast notes so everyone can go and read. But thanks again.
Expect a flood of readers, Andy.
Yes, that's so we control. we are major aggregators, as they say.
Do you guys just sit there and click on the link over and over and over again? So
like, we have Russian bots that do that.
Well, at least you're. Progressive technology.
Exactly right.
All right, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
Bye-bye.
No one like him.
No One Like Him, and boy, those pieces are great. I mean, you could kind of just print them all out and take a bath and read them, and it'd be the most fun you've had. Which is kind of a weird image. I just thought of that. Like maybe you don't want to do that. Maybe you just want to curl up and read Andy Ferguson's selected pieces. It is always rewarding to learn something new we didn't know yesterday, which I think just happened. And one thing we've learned is that I don't do segues. But that's why we love having subscriptions to the Great Courses Plus. This is unlimited on-demand access to a large library of engaging video lectures presented by award-winning professors and experts. You can learn as much as you want about topics that interest you, history, politics, even cooking and photography. And this is not part of their copy, but this is actually one of the cool things. You can then press pause and go do something else and then come back. So you have total control over it. The Great Courses Plus is constantly adding new subjects, new lectures, new professors. There's always something new. There are courses for everyone. In fact, they just added a couple of new courses that you should check out: an economic history of the world since 1400, an English grammar boot camp, which I think I do need. And you can stream the Great Courses Plus anywhere, anytime, from any device. And we have a special offer for Ricochet Podcast listeners. We want you to sign up for the Great Courses Plus today. As one of our listeners, you get an entire free month of unlimited access to all of the lectures when you sign up. Joe, you can just keep looking for new courses to add to your watch list, which they pay attention to, and you can request lists too. They do that. It's a pretty cool company. So start your free month today by going to The Great Courses Plus. That's all one word, thegreatcoursesplus.com/ricochet, thegreatcoursesplus.com/ricochet. And we thank The Great Courses for sponsoring the Ricochet Podcast, and we're really excited about The Great Courses Plus, which is a new thing. You know, we were just talking earlier, Peter, and it is true. Like, usually when we talk, and if there's like 10 minutes of Trump bashing, then people say, "What about Hillary?" Like, and I don't think that we are. Look, I'm almost 100% certain. I know who's the next president's going to be, and I feel like we should be honing our Hillary bashing skills. It is to me. I hate being this guy because I hate like bringing this up, but the Podesta emails, some of them are just stupid, and some of them don't matter to me, and some of them aren't interesting at all. But the cynical manufacturing of reasons to be against TPP,
right?
She's not uniquely craven as an American politician, and she's not uniquely meretricious.
Sure.
Well, okay. All right. But she is the shiny example of everything that is wrong with American presidential politics in a general and American politics in general.
Right.
Without a doubt.
In some ways, the saddest statement on, and why should we want to return to sad statements after the delight of having
Andy?
But the saddest statement on the current situation is that Hillary Clinton, people feel more comfortable with Hillary Clinton because she represents a stable extension of the status quo.
Right.
And the status quo is craven and manipulative and assumes that it knows better. It's the Washington is staffed up, as is Hillary's campaign, with 20 and 30 and 40 somethings who think they're educated. By the way, what was so striking to me about the anti-Catholic stuff was the sheer ignorance of it.
Yeah,
there wasn't any real bile toward Catholics, but these were emails exchanged during the pontificate of Joseph Ratzinger, Benedict XVI, and it referred to Catholicism as stupid, and it called it a bastardization of the faith. And if you write such an email when the Pope is one of the most accomplished academics of the 20th century and one of the finest writers and one of the most subtle – you may disagree with him on every point he ever makes. But the idea that suggesting that Catholicism is stupid is just a kind of high school level – ignorance. They feel, I'm afraid, that institutions such as your alma mater and mine, the Ivies and Stanford and Cal, are all implicated in this, producing kids who think they're educated because they went to elite institutions, but who know so little, who just know so little history.
Oh, yeah.
And
history of religion, religious history. It's amazing the most influential work of literature in the human history, whether you you treat it as literature, as the Word of God, is clearly the Bible with a, it's like 50,000 stories in there that have a ripple effect and have created world literature. You can't understand certainly Western literature without understanding the Bible. Half the references you won't get, and they just don't know it. And what was amazing about those emails was that at no point does anybody in that email chain acknowledge or worry or think that there might be somebody else on this chain who is a practicing Catholic.
Right.
The idea was like, well, we don't have anybody like that here. So that's the outside, the tent, and we can say
actually,
whatever we want.
Andy has – just sort of listening to the two of us right now, Andy has infected me with a certain optimism, and here's why. Hillary is – at this stage, Hillary Clinton is extremely likely to win, and she may win quite big. And Andy's perfectly correct that the Democrats will misinterpret that as a mandate. Yeah. And right. Yet what will really happen is that for the next 4 years, the majority of Americans, according to all the polls, the majority of Americans mistrust Hillary Clinton. And so they will have what is really, really the correct starting position, the correct fundamental outlook on the executive branch of the federal government, which is suspicion. Whatever she says, whatever she proposes, right. Americans will say, she doesn't mean it.
Prove it.
Or prove it. And that actually, there is – so that – as opposed to 8 years ago when Barack Obama was elected and we got swept away on a completely unfounded kind of delirium that we were ushering in a new era – that it was post
cash for clunkers. I mean, I always remind people cash for clunkers because this old program that failed utterly. It was a complete boondoggle. But all that stuff kind of went away in the haze of adoration and a lot of fog machine. Yeah.
And there's a lot of time. We won't be wasting time with Hillary the way we wasted the country with Barack Obama. It's not going to take 2 years for people to come to their senses. Everybody will have come to their senses the day after she's inaugurated.
Exactly right. I agree. Well, we agree on this. This is a historic moment. And so let's do. Well, I know we got to wrap. I'll do a little bit of housekeeping from the member feed. Father B writes,
"Fingers us."
In which I disparage this website and its founders. Is it just me or the contributors and founders of this great site posting less often and more meagerly than they did in the past? There are only a handful of websites that I visit regularly for political news and commentary. Ricochet has been one of them for a few years now, but I find myself visiting less and less. I think because as I scroll through the main feed, I mostly see posts about the latest podcasts and some promoted posts from the member feed. It seems rare these days to find anything substantial, for example, from Peter or Rob, both of whom, when they do post, tend to post brief remarks or questions for the rest of us to wrestle over. Nothing wrong with that, of course, and I love the member contributions and podcasts, but I get the latter through iTunes. Peter!
Rob!
What do you think?
Well, what I think – so I know – what I think is we've made a conscious decision to try to turn this – to try to turn the website right. and podcast, two different entities, it turns out, and we've made a conscious decision to turn the website much more into a member entity, the redesign, enabling people to vote up posts and so forth, right. all to follow each other, to exchange emails more closely, all of that consciously intended – by you and me and the folks we were working with to turn the site much more over to the right. members. And so you and on balance, I consider that a correct choice and a healthy development. However, I have to admit, I am smitten just a little bit in my conscience by this post because it's true, I haven't been posting as much. And part of the reason is just childishness. This political cycle, I just can't stand it. I just can't stand it. I don't. All right. I watch the debate and I cringe. I cringe. I should have been posting more, I suppose, but I would just be posting negative stuff. I'm trying to go to confession to you, Rob, and you're an Episcopalian.
No.
So just no
yeah, whatever. So I don't believe in it. I think that's true. I think that it is sort of complicated because a lot of it – I mean, I'd say a lot of it is hard to express. The way that Ricochet was planned out and, our original intent was as that kind of conversation place, right? And that the contributors were really just there to get the conversation going, sort of like when you You know, you go on cruise ships and there's they hire the old dudes there to dance with the widows, you know, just to kind of get things going, get the party started. And that's for two reasons. One, because I really am – I'm genuinely interested in what happens in the member feed. I mean, I would never, ever not want to promote more – I want to promote more stuff in the member feed up. We may have to re-toggle the upvoting number. It's an algorithm. It's just a threshold now. We may have to lower it because that's really what I want to see, and that's what I want people – around the country to see. I want to read that more than read stuff that I write. And also, to be quite honest with you, there's no way that we, Little Ricochet, can compete with larger entities that have more money to pay contributors to contribute. We don't pay anybody. We just kind of hope they want to do something for us. And most of the people that you and I know who are contributors in that sense are professional writers, and they're not rich, and they got to write. And so if someone's saying, look, right, I'll pay you $800 for a column, and then we say, well, I'll pay you nothing, but I'll put it on the main page, and then I want you to interact with our members. It's just a hard economic argument to make. That said, maybe the front page is a little too heavy with podcasts. Maybe we got to figure out another way to design it so some of the contributions and the text doesn't get swallowed up. We got to maybe fine tune that. But in general, I mean, I hear the concern, but we really do want to make it. It is astonishing to me how many people come up to me who are people who make policy and who refer to stuff that happened on Ricochet and are not saying I read Peter's piece or I read X and Y person's piece. They say, yeah, one of your members, I don't know which one. And they refer to that. And I feel like that is part of this big experiment, is how can we get thoughtful, smart, civil voices that would otherwise be somewhere else, and how can we get them with a spotlight on them in the front page to maybe help drive the national conversation. And anyway, that's it. And then for me personally, when I post, I usually post either something nuts like what I did on the weekend about what Trump should do, and then or I post a little weird little thing that I saw, because I'm you know, politics at this point is just kind of exhausting. But I also never want to bigfoot my way on the main. I mean, I want to read member stuff, so there's that. And also, you know, you and I are engaged full time in trying to keep the lights on. That's the other thing we do.
Right, right. And yet, we have to admit that there are some people who find you and me more interesting than we find each other.
That's very true. I suspect that that's a character failing of theirs. They should be listening more closely.
So, Rob, by the way, do we have any evidence? You did write this. We were talking about how seldom the two of us host, and yet you wrote this wonderfully hilarious but also quite telling piece. And I thought to myself, as did everyone when he read it, good Lord, if Donald Trump actually should take Rob's advice. And then Donald Trump did take your advice.
He took half of it, which I think was not quite the spirit of the dose. You required both pills and not just one.
Do you have?
No, I wrote a piece over the weekend. No, I have zero evidence. Except that somebody on Fox, I did a Fox Business hit on Monday, and she had read the piece and she saw that, and she said, so they read you. They must be reading you. I'm like, I don't know. How would I know? How would I know if anybody? But they probably – I mean, look, what I came up with was not the most original thing for him to do. But it certainly was, I think, it would have been more successful than what he did, put it that way.
All right.
Who knows? Peter, it's almost all over.
Next week.
Yeah. We would like to thank you for listening. If you're a Ricochet member, we are pleased and honored to have you as a member with us. If you're not and you've been putting it off, please go to ricochet.com, get a free month. No, absolutely no risk to you. We also want to thank the great courses, thegreatcoursesplus.com, Casper Mattresses, and Zip Recruiter. Go to the Ricochet store. Lots of great Ricochet swag in the Ricochet store. If you like the show, just take a minute, review it on iTunes. That kind of allows people to discover us and helps keep everything going. And of course, we need 1,500 members. We're about halfway there. We need you very much. So next week?
And I call out Reagan member Jamie Lockett, whom it was an honor to meet here in San Francisco just a couple of weeks ago. Next week, Rob.
'Twas in another lifetime, one of toil and blood. When blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel and death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. Not a word was spoke between us, there was a little risk involved. Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where it's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. Suddenly I turned around and she was standing there, with silver bracelets on her wrists and flowers in her hair. She walked up to me so gracefully and took my crown of thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Now there's a wall between us, something that's been lost. I took too much for granted, I got my signals crossed. Just pretend till it all began on a non-eventful morn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. The deputy walks on hard nails and the preacher rides a mount. But nothing really matters much, it's doom alone that counts. And the one-eyed undertaker, he blows a feudal horn. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.
I've heard newborn babies wailing like a moaning dove. An old man with broken teeth, stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. In a little hilltop village, they gambled for my clothes. I bargained for salvation and she gave me a lethal dose. I offered up my innocence, I got repaid with scorn. Come in, she said, I'll give you a shelter from the storm. Well, I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound to cross the line. Beauty walks a razor's edge, someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the clock to when God and her were born. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm.